Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Welcome back, Driven Woman. In today's fascinating interview, I talk with my guest, Amira Alvarez, who is the founder and CEO of The Unstoppable Woman. She is a speaker, podcaster, and leadership coach. And today we are going to talk about some of the topics that so many women steer clear of. But we don't shy away from the tough stuff here on the Driven Woman podcast. So Amira and I are going to do a deep dive into the shadow side of being driven and ambitious. What is the shadow side, you ask? Well, the shadow side is what ruins our health, our relationships, and often the very business we are trying so damn hard to grow and scale. Amira speaks in a clear and unapologetic way on the painful truths about striving for success and how we can unknowingly prevent ourselves from actually achieving it. It has been said that becoming an entrepreneur is the ultimate personal growth experience, and I can't agree more. In this fast-paced conversation, Amira shares some of her wake-up calls and what I call rude awakenings. Listen for these. The hamster wheel of drive and ambition equals never feeling like you're enough. What happened when she realized that she was actually addicted to struggle? And when she finally recognized that she didn't die by doing things differently. If you have ever asked yourself what you are doing wrong, why you aren't making bank yet, and when you're going to reach the entrepreneurial promised land, this conversation is going to be one of your favorites on this podcast. Women of influence, and I think that includes those of us who podcast, just need to be more honest about the not so glamorous side of entrepreneurship. And that is why I am proud to share this revealing conversation with you. Today's episode mic drop moment is when Amira shares, quote, getting sick was my stopping strategy, unquote. Here we go. Okay, if you are offended by two alpha females dropping some F-bombs and a whole lot of truth bombs, you probably want to leave right now. Oh, you're still here? Awesome. Today's guest is Amira Alvarez, who is a business strategist, a fellow podcaster, and I gotta say, a badass and bold female. We are going to talk about not only the things that you have come to expect from the Driven Woman podcast, like going after your dreams, managing your mindset, and charging your value, not to be confused with charging your worth. But today we are going to talk about some things that you don't often hear, like ambition shaming, like being addicted to the struggle, and how no matter how high you climb, you can actually never feel satisfied. But Amira's got some really good advice for that. So let's just drop right in. I want you to tell me first, before we get into all the juicy details, why did you decide to focus your business on helping women maximize their revenue by changing their mindset?
It's a good question. I wish there was a more thoughtful, sort of planned out answer that I could share with you. But fundamentally, it was because the majority of my clients, when I hung up my shingle and started this work, were women who I knew from past. I had a previous business that I went down a road of personal growth on and business coaching on, and was seeking how to build a business. And I came across all these fabulous women entrepreneurs and small business owners, and they became my friends on Facebook. And when I started to do this as a thing, then I was like, you know what? I'm really good at this. Let's do this. They all became my first clients. And I really loved helping them. And then there's this aspect of, you know, what got to happen for me, Diane? Like, I went from feeling powerful on the outside, presenting in the world as a very confident, as you say, sort of alpha female, but on the inside, second guessing myself, feeling like there was a lot of, am I doing it right? How do I do this? Am I good enough? And I wouldn't have even said that I articulated those thoughts in my head. They were so like subconscious, but I knew that I felt insecure. And my, you know, big moment on that was when my dog, different dog than this, but my dog was looking at me and I had this thought like, oh my God, he's judging me. Like, does he think that I'm a bad doggy mother? And I was like, this is freaking ridiculous, right? Jesus. Like I got the level of ridiculousness there. It's like, okay, something's got to change here. This is not okay to have this level of self-doubt, really, even though I wasn't calling it good enough. I called it the framing that I did, Diane, was I kept looking outside of myself for understanding if I was doing something right. So I was outside directed versus inside directed. And I wanted to become someone who was inside directed. I now language that as being the authority in your life. And that started a whole process, and it went hand in hand with, you know, growing the business and quantum leaping and all of that. But fundamentally, I had to do this work myself, and I had to transform what was happening on the inside to transform what was happening on the outside. Like, the inner work is never small. If you want the outer work to be great, like it has to be connected. And so I went on that path, and I did the outer work as well. But because I had done this inside transformation, I was able to, you know, build a 7-figure business, 5 times my income in 1 year, whatever you want to, like, status oriented, money oriented, achievement oriented. It allowed me to do that. But to answer your original question, it was because, you know, I realized what freedom looked like after I got to the other side. And by the way, I keep growing, but like that first main hurdle, it was like, oh my God, I want everyone to have this. Like, I just, like, this is freaking exceptional to be able to self-manage and to show up in this world and to live and not to live in that self-doubt. That then I was like, okay, well, there are so many women who are like this. And it's not that men aren't, but I have I'm attuned to the issues that come up for women in business who tend to be similar to me, driven, excited, ambitious, but on the inside, there was a lot of self-doubt. So that's a long way of answering that question, but there you go.
Well, you have a lot to say. And I think that we serve similar people. I like to say that I serve women who are bold, brilliant, and badass, but there is a disconnect between how the world sees them and how they see themselves. And I almost think about, like, it's like a funhouse mirror. You know, you're looking in the funhouse mirror. Or what I've heard about so many women who have body dysmorphic issues and eating disorders, what they literally see when they look at themselves is not what everyone else sees. And that sounds completely crazy, but I don't think I've ever met a driven, ambitious, motivated, high ability, high energy, talented, creative woman who didn't struggle with these very things we're talking about, with insecurity, with, you know, lack of confidence, with imposter issues, with questioning, even when they're successful, am I doing it right? As though the success was completely disconnected from what they had to do to get it. And I think, this can't just be me. And as you and I both know, it's almost endemic. I mean, I think almost the smarter and more motivated you are, the harder these problems are to identify and resolve. And that's why I'm so happy to connect with other women who are holding up this banner and who are showing other women, look, you look at me and you think, oh, she's attractive, she's intelligent, she's educated, she's successful, she looks like she's got it all together and even knows where the hell it is. You should meet my self-talk, right?
Yeah. And I think what turned it around for me, Diane, was this mapping of the intellectual understanding of what was happening to taking action that was confronting of that and living to tell about it, right? Like going through it and realizing I didn't die by doing it differently. Mm. And that just, that helped make concrete the intellectual understanding. And to really do like a base level, sort of foundational level, what that understanding needs to be in order to turn this around, you really have to look at how our self-image is created. And in particular for women who all of you, well, I shouldn't say all of you, but many people understand like the concept of people pleasing and jumping through hoops and doing all these things for other people. And that's quite frankly how not just women are brought up, but most people are brought up. Like we have to study for the test and do things for other people to get the accolade. But in particular for women, there is this idea that our sense of self gets affirmed by what other people deem as appropriate or good or valuable. Hence my, like, what does my dog think about me? Right? Like it's, mm-hmm. it's absurd when you break it down to that level, but we're trained to be concerned. And the positive side of this is like, we're concerned with how other people feel and we're concerned by, you know, how they're doing in the world and that they're happy. And like, we're caretakers and we want to not throw the baby out with the bathwater with that. But the shadow side of that is that you're not defining what success looks like to you. You're not defining who you are in this world. You're not defining your own self-image. So it's completely dependent on outside people in most cases, especially people who don't go as far as I go with the dog thing, but like it's determined.
I'm sure you're not the only one, Amir.
I'm sure I'm not. But you know, we're turning outside and you can't please everyone. Some people say work harder. Some people say take it easy. Some people say, you know, you need to work 9 to 5. Some people say you need to work whenever you feel like it and be in the flow. Like, mm-hmm. who are you going to please, right? If you're just looking at sort of your schedule and business. But like, there's a gazillion different ways to do marketing, right? And like, if you're looking at this person, you're going to jump through these hoops. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right fit for you and your business. So let's go back 1,000 steps and figure out who you are and how you're going to define success for yourself. And then do the things that are going to make that concrete and realize that you're not going to die by letting other people down. Okay. Or let me say that differently. It's not letting other people down. It's by not jumping through the hoops that you have created in your mind that you think that they want.
Yeah. Yeah, when other people's expectations are not met by you, that's actually okay. It is not your job to meet other people's expectations because that's a moving target. Well, I guess it depends. I guess it depends on the situation, but you're reminding me of one of the things that I'm most critical about in our industry. You and I are both business coaches, mindset coaches, business strategists, and I see too many of our industry, too many celebrity coaches and gurus basically saying, women, you have all been, maybe not saying this word for word, but essentially, you have been culturally conditioned to be people pleasers and perfectionists and constantly consumed with thinking you're not enough, or maybe you're too much, or both. And, you know, I have the way, just follow me. It's like, what's the difference? Like, you're literally saying, you know, you cannot find out who you are and be who you are and leverage who you are and be successful and actually be satisfied with your success, because you've been trained to look to others to affirm you, but follow me and I'll tell you exactly what to do because it's what worked for me. I'm like, isn't that the same thing?
Yeah. You know, and you have to do it. You really have to do it differently, right? You have to step back from that and go, okay, well, what do I want? Okay. Desire is causative. I think that's what calls us forward. Mm. It's what drives us. So what do I want? And that can be like a mind-melting question. It seems like this most simplistic thing. But when I was starting out, I had no freaking idea what I wanted, Diane. Like the thing that I knew that I wanted was I got hooked by this idea of having a 7-figure business.
I'm so glad you're going here, Amira, because it's like, where did this idea that everybody, when new coaches are, I just want to make six figures. And then it's like, why do you want to make 6 figures? Do you need 6 figures? Like, what do you need that for? What kind of lifestyle needs do you have? I just want to make 6 figures. Why? They don't know, because celebrity coaches are telling them six figures. And now we all know six figures isn't enough. You want to make seven figures. Why? Because somehow somebody told you, or enough people told you, or enough Facebook ads were purchased that told you that seven figures is the metric. And now you're just following that. It's like there's no self-discovery and self-awareness. So of course it's not going to be satisfying. It's just a different hamster wheel.
Yes. And I'm very upfront. Like in the beginning, I did not know beyond, okay, I want to get to seven figures. Something hooked me about that concept, which is what you're saying. It's like, why do you even want that?
Somebody's Facebook ads.
I went to a seminar and I was like, I heard that it was possible. And I was like, I want that.
Yeah.
But then I started to live what I call universal laws, where I understood how desire was causative. And I went forward on faith belief without having the experiential knowledge yet. But I was like, okay, I'm gonna play this out and see if it works for me and move forward as if it's absolute. And I discovered through my experience that it is. And I went forward after that desire, doing the things, not magical thinking, doing the cause and effect, the law of cause and effect things to create this with all the ups and downs and the emotional stuff and all of that. I'm not going to gloss over the fact that there were challenges.
Hell yeah. It's hard work and you make a lot of mistakes.
Totally. And 2020 hindsight, like on the other side of that, by a number of years, looking back, I realized that I could not see my purpose. I could not see what the reasons were that I wanted that. But I believed in the truth that desire is causative, that it's calling you forward, that it shows you where to go. So I followed that on faith. And now I know that all the things that I learned on that journey, and am still learning, by the by, right? All the things that I learned on that journey are the things that I'm meant to do in this world. Like, it is my purpose to help women unpack this stuff. And I had to go through it. And I didn't know that it was about more than just the money or just achieving the goal. But owning that goal had a really positive effect. Now, if I had stayed in that place of just like the next hamster wheel goal, right? Like, okay, now I want this and now I want this, I wouldn't be a good teacher and I wouldn't be able to coach people at the level that I do. I had to learn that it was that meta process of understanding, okay, what do I want? Which is to me, the universe, spirit, source, God, whatever you want to call the energy that is calling you forward into your purpose. If you own that, then you build your self-image to fit that. And when I say self-image, I mean your identity, who you know yourself to be.
Your opinion of yourself, basically. Who do I know myself to be?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. To fit that desire. And then you do the work, the inner and the outer work, to live that identity. You become that person. Is it easy? No. Okay. Is the concept simple? Yes. Then you become someone for whom you love your life and you're not afraid of the process. You're not afraid of letting other people down. You're not afraid of rejection. You're not afraid of disappointment. You're not afraid of not making your goals because you know how to do that. Like that's the meta. And then there's all this other stuff that you have to learn. When you actually do that, you become the person who has that self-ownership or that authority in her life. Then when you choose that next goal, it's not because you're on the hamster wheel and you think you're on that like status achievement next thing. I'm not good enough if I don't do it. You're doing it for a different reason. And that makes it so much fun. Then it becomes like a freaking thrill. And it's not that there's never the ups and downs or emotional challenges or any of that. But like, I don't have, like, I understand the process so completely now that I don't have imposter syndrome or that self-doubt or any of that. I now know, oh, this is me having dissonance between where I am now and my new self-image. And then I have that intellectual understanding, so I don't go into the spin out.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Oh, of course. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm sure you're familiar with the work of Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap, and all the rest. I mean, forms the foundation of so much of my teaching and coaching, is that literally we don't even know who we are. I mean, if you think about it this way, Emma, it's like you, of course, we don't know what we want because we don't actually know who we are, because we have been taught to think who we are is who we've been told we are by our parents, by our teachers, by our siblings, by our culture. So we literally are living in this totally unrealistic fantasy world where we think we know who we are. We think we know what we want because that's what we've been told. And then, of course, you're never satisfied. Of course, nothing ever feels like enough. It's a false reality the whole time. It's really funny. I don't find a lot of other folks who do the kind of work that we do are as tapped in as you are about the fact that you are literally changing your identity. Because a lot of people talk about changing your thoughts, changing your thoughts, changing your thoughts. A lot of people talk about changing your emotions. Some people just talk about taking massive action. But I don't find a lot of people are aware that actually to not just memorize those thoughts that someone else might give you or read them off of an affirmation sheet or something, to actually be the person who will naturally think those thoughts, feel those feelings, and take those actions and get those results, you are literally in the process of becoming a different person, which of course has a different identity. And that feels very threatening to most people. They will tell you all day long, you know, I hate my life. I hate my this. I hate my that. But then you're like, well, it sounds like you need to become a new person. What? It's like, it sounds like you need an identity adjustment. Maybe you need a complete identity transformation into a person who is capable of having a life they fucking love. Well, totally. When you put it that way, it's like, well, how, you can put it however you want, but you literally have to become a different person and embrace a new identity. I used to joke that, you know, even becoming a coach from a therapist, I thought that was just a simple pivot. I thought that I'm already used to interviewing people. I'm used to teaching people. I'm used to helping people. I'm used to pointing out their, you know, negative thinking and giving them options. It literally was a totally different identity transformation because a coach isn't dealing with pathology. A coach is dealing with possibility and inviting people to see themselves in a new way, in a totally different frame than being a therapist. Yeah. But it's kind of like what you said earlier about you had to become the person to do the work that you did. And now, 2020 hindsight, you can help people become the person they need to be to achieve the results they wanted. You probably wouldn't have signed up for the whole thing if you had known
it. Holy smokes, no.
What it was going to put you through, right? It's like, woo, that's a white knuckler.
No, I wouldn't have. And here's the thing, that couple things to riff on what you just said. So there's a dissonance between where you are now and where you want to be. Okay, this is the new identity you're working to create because it matches the goals that you want.
Mm-hmm. And the desires that you have. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so this is the level at which you need to be working, but you're currently here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just listening to the audio on this, there's a gap between my two hands by about mm-hmm. a foot. I'm modeling this. And you will feel uncomfortable acting like the person who gets the seven-figure results when you're only making 100K. You're going to think, that's not who I am. Who mm-hmm. am I to do X, Y, and Z? And that looks...
I'm a faker. I'm faking it.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't think those words, because I never thought those words, okay? Mm. I would think, I can't do that. Like, I couldn't invest at that level. I couldn't hire at that level. And I coach my clients on, you have to make decisions from the place you want to be. And by the way, it's decisions and actions both, but like you Correct. Have to decide and act from the place you want to be, not from the place you are now. But that feels really uncomfortable, is putting it mildly.
It terrifying puts you into, is probably closer to
yeah.
it.
And you get this, people feel a lot of shame because they're in conflict with their identity, and their subconscious yes. mind is going to say, no, that's not who you are.
Yes.
And then, you know, my company is called the Unstoppable Woman because it's at that point that you have to keep going And you're a psychotherapist, so you know the subconscious will find any reason that you will agree with, not what Josie down the street's going to agree with, but what you agree with to stop, whether that's getting sick, picking a fight with your partner, so then you break up, and of course you have to cry yourself to sleep every night, and you can't do your work, and maybe you hurt your knee because you overtrain or something, and it gets you to stop. Yes. By a totally reasonable, logical...
Upper limiting.
Totally.
Upper limiting. I mean, everybody talks about the glass ceiling. We don't need no glass ceiling. We have our own upper limits to hold us down, like in every possible way. But when you actually understand that and you're like, oh, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not broken, weird, crazy. This is just how the human brain works to keep me safe. But I don't have to let this voice be in the driver's seat. I don't even have to let it ride shotgun. I can put that shit in the trunk and think what I want to think to go where I want to go. Nothing's actually wrong. It's kind of, don't you just wish that we would actually teach elementary school children how their mind and brain work so that they wouldn't have to spend decades unlearning this shit when they grow up? Can you imagine where you'd be now? Oof. Hey, it's Diane with a quick interruption to the episode because I've got a couple questions I just need to ask you. One, are you where you want to be in your business? Are you making the money you want to make, working the hours you want to work, seeing the clients that you want to see, and getting the income and impact that you went into business to get? And if the answer is no, what's holding you back? Why is there a gap between where you are and where you want to be? Do you know the answer? In my experience working with female solopreneurs, so many of them don't even really know what's standing in their way. And that is so frustrating. So I created a little quiz called What's Holding You Back? There's a link to it in the show notes. If this is you, please take the quiz. And if you do, DM me on Instagram at Coach Diane Wingert and let me know your results. Now, on the other hand, if you already know what's holding you back, if you already know what the obstacles are that are getting in your way from achieving the income and impact that you deserve and desire, then I don't want you to take the quiz. Forget about the quiz. Go directly to the other link in the show notes and book a consult with me. I may be the very coach, and this may be the year that you put all of that behind you and really have the business that you went into business to have. For everybody else, keep on listening. And if you find value in what you hear, don't forget to leave me a rating and review on Apple or wherever you're listening. Here we go, back to the show.
Now, looking back, you know, a year from now to today, I'm a completely different person. Even, you know, from the very first day that I started to work with you, I realized things are going to be really different. I mean, actually, I know before we even spoke, when I heard you on that podcast, I thought, you know, this woman is exactly what I need. And there, honestly, I've never met anyone like you. And I'm so appreciative of everything that you've done. I mean, just sharing your experiences with everyone and being so open and honest, and just seeing you and how you interact with other people and how you share your experiences has helped in that recalibration in my own mind, because now I can accept myself for who I am and I don't have to apologize for who I am. Who I am is who I am, and I love who I am. I'm not perfect by any means, no one is, but I'm freaking awesome.
Be huge. And like, so the examples that I give can sometimes be triggery to people because it's culturally acceptable to stop when you're sick, right?
Yes.
And that's my stopping pattern.
Unless you're a workaholic.
Unless you're right. But that's my stopping strategy. I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get like overwhelmed and sick. So then I don't have to show up and do that next level thing in my business that's confronting me. And getting sick is a completely legitimate reason to slow down, take it easy, to stop, all that. So I had to figure out strategies so that I wouldn't not take care of myself, but also so I wouldn't stop. Or like when the boyfriend breaks up with you, like,
yes,
like, shouldn't that cause you to go into like 3 weeks of just feeling like crap? I spent an hour. Okay. It's like an afternoon of like, okay, what am I learning from this? Okay, great. Let's go. And I know that sounds like you haven't processed your feelings, but I also knew I'm going to process my feelings when they come up, but I'm going to hold myself to a higher standard at the same time of like what this is calling me forward into. And in doing that, I realized I didn't have to freaking fall apart. I could love him and love our relationship and keep going forward and not stop and process my feelings. And it was so liberating, Diane. So all of those things, I love you so much already.
Can I just tell you, I swear to God, you're going to be my new best friend, because I actually allocate the amount of time to an experience based on how much room I'm willing to let it take up in my life. Yeah. And I'm going to make a lot of enemies right now amongst my therapist colleagues, but the number one reason why I'm no longer a therapist is because I realized I was colluding with my clients who I had pledged to help. I was colluding with them in keeping them attached to their past by allowing them to take as much time as they thought they needed to process the loss, to process the trauma, to process the disappointment, to whatever it is. It's like, you know, have you ever noticed that things take as much time as you give them? Why give yourself 5 years to grieve a loss? What if you could grieve a loss, like not like a partially digested meal that sits in your gut and makes you sick and constipated, but like literally process a loss with the amount of time that you devote to it, and you fully devote that time to it. I'm going to give myself a month, a week, a day, an hour, whatever you deem. I'm not going to be in denial. I'm not going to minimize. I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to buffer. I'm not going to try to drink my way through it. I'm not going to distract myself. I'm going to do the work, but it's not open-ended.
Absolutely. And tell me if you agree with this. So what I found in myself and subsequently in working with my clients is that there, for me, there is like true pain, true emotion, true, like what I'm feeling right now. And it comes out and it's just the truth. And it's my immediate responsiveness. Mm-hmm. It's in the moment. And then there's the story about
yes,
it.
Yes.
And the story is what keeps you there for hours, days, weeks, months.
Decades.
And so decades, right. And I'm not available for that. I'm just not available for it. And yet this was something that I kept repeating old stories to myself about why I couldn't do things.
Yes.
And this was what ultimately I had to break free of. And then you learn it as a methodology that you can actually change the story and you don't have to be trapped by the story.
Let me tell you a little personal story. I was adopted, and I was adopted into a very dysfunctional, abusive, crazy family. And I found out I was adopted when I was 9. And I remember making the decision. I didn't even know what the word meant. And then someone told me, and I'm like, oh, that means like adopted. I literally did not know what the word meant. It was completely neutral to me. This is the point. I heard the word, someone told me what it meant. And I decided, Amara, I decided, oh, well, that means if my biological parents didn't want me and they gave me away, then that means I'm not as good as other people. I also decided it means that I will have to work as hard as I can to cover up the fact that I'm not as good as other people, which created massive perfectionism and overachievingness. And no matter what I do, I will never be as good as anyone else. what a load of shit.
Yeah.
But I believed it. I decided it. I believed it. It became my identity for a good little while until eventually through therapy, through personal growth work, through coaching, I realized, well, what if it doesn't mean that? What if it means something else? And what if I get to decide what it means, regardless of what anyone else might decide? I think that was the beginning of completely changing my life for the better, because truly, any one of us can decide who we are and what kind of life we are going to have. But I think it takes a certain amount of courage to do that, because I'm sure you've noticed it's much more common and much more popular for people to complain that their life isn't what they want it to be while doing nothing to make it any different. Yeah. I'm just not having it.
Yeah. Well, you got to want what you want more than the pain of changing, the fear of changing, the fear of ramifications of changing. Because when you change, the people around you have to adjust. And where do we find our security? Most people, okay,
yes.
This is not the truth of where security comes from, but most people think they're secure if other people around them are there.
Yeah, accept them, approve of them, and so forth. Yep. Agreed.
All of that, right? And so if you have that, and here's the thing, we all need people. You can't not be in this world as a human and not need people. There's a rare few who go to the Alaska wilderness and live in a, you know, yurt, okay?
Yeah.
But most of us, we need people, and especially in business, you need people. You need clients, you need colleagues, you need mentors, all of that. You need team members, you need people. You got to get good with people.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that happens is that people get what gets mapped as, you know, mother God, daddy God. Mm-hmm. That's where we got love and attention as children. And then we think, in when we were young, we had to keep those lines of attention and love going, or we wouldn't survive. That was actually our survival. But
absolutely.
Now we're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, right? And we now think that this one person, whether it's our love partner or our client or the lead or the particular team member, that they're where our security comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not one person anymore. In fact, it's how you're showing up. Okay. So I lost the thread about what you were saying when I went on this little riff, but I think it's important to recognize that your growth is going to trigger other people. That's what we were talking about. Your growth is going to trigger other people. They might love it. They might not love it. And most people don't want to risk this false sense of security in order to go for what they want. It's not something that they want badly enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean, I want people listening to really understand this, that doesn't mean you have to alienate all the people you love, okay? Like, that doesn't mean that you have to reject people in your life, but you have to be willing to risk that and have the difficult conversations and show up differently in order for you to grow into being the person who has the life that she and business that she desires.
Mm-hmm. I think it's probably one of the healthiest but most challenging things that we not only can do, but we need to do if we want to actually have this authentic life and actually find fulfillment and satisfaction from the goals that we reach instead of just checking something off the list and moving on to the next one, is to deeply embrace the understanding that as you allow yourself to continually evolve and grow, there will be people that will fall away. They don't want what you want. They're not heading where you're heading. Just looking up the mountain that you are compelled to climb gives them a nosebleed and they feel dizzy and they're like, oh, hell no. And that's okay. I think that was one of the harder things that I needed to accept, is that if I continue to allow myself to grow, I will outgrow people that I love, people that I want to continue on the journey with me. But that is their choice. And if I hold myself back so that I stay in alignment with them, that's a choice that I can make if I choose to. But if I do make it, I need to be able to make it free from resentment. Yeah. So I think it's sometimes one of my little mottos is, when it's time to grow, you got to go. And sometimes you just need to go. Something I wanted to ask you about before we're out of time today is, and you have so many things that you do beautifully. I love how you talk about doing things gently but boldly, because you normally don't see those words together. But I wonder if you would comment on what we see, and we've weaved it a little bit through the conversation, but I wonder if you would speak to it directly, is how often we get addicted to the struggle. Because we've been talking a lot about being culturally conditioned to keep checking things off and keep thinking, well, I need to get to 6 figures and then I need to get to 7 figures. And a lot of times it's education. Like, I've had a lot of women tell me the reason they got a PhD is because it was the highest degree that they could achieve in their field. And I'm like, for what purpose? Like, so because you needed it to be a professor, or you needed it, you know, because that was another level. And I'm like, and how do you feel about the 10 years of your life that you invested in it? So what do you think it is that makes us so addicted to struggling that when there's an opportunity to 5X or 10X, as you have, your income and make your business and life easier, that's a really harsh decision for so many women to make? I mean, first of all, they don't believe it's possible, but even when they do, it somehow feels like, is that like illegal, or should I be ashamed? I would feel too guilty to let myself do that. What the fuck is that about?
Well, it's all conditioning, right? It's all how we know ourselves to be good, valued human beings in this world. So most of us had, you know, parents who said, thank God it's Friday, and came home after work totally exhausted. And that's how we earned money, right? Like, you knew that you had done a good job if you were exhausted, right? That's how you knew if you had put the appropriate amount of effort in. And this keeps you trapped. Let me just tell you, this keeps you absolutely friggin' trapped. Do you want to be like, there's this myth, like, I'm going to work hard until this stage and then it's going to get easier. But it just stays this way until you learn the mechanism. And for me, I say it in a lot of different ways, but today I'm going to say it like this, like, you have to be unavailable for that. I just had this, Diane, and I iterate on this, and now I know how to iterate on it quickly. But I just had this again, you know, a couple of weeks ago, week and a half ago, where I was like, I have no freaking time. Where, you know, this is crazy. I can't work like this. Right. That was the story.
Yeah, the story
for about a day, and well, more than that, but a bit of time in my head. And I'd already gone down to a 4-day work week, and I'd already like made sure that meetings only happened. Like, I had done the calendaring and the time blocking and all of that. It was an addiction to struggle. But I saw it for what it was. Oh, look, here it is again. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you either stay there, this is how women plateau, okay? Or you say, oh, heads up, remember this. I'm going to remember this for later. Oh, when I feel overwhelmed, it's a pattern for stopping. The person I want to be is here. What does she do? She creates a new business model. She hires different people. How quickly can she do that? Right? And it's done, right? Like, that was literally, I mean, I'm tooting my own horn here, but I think it's a great thing for people to hear that there's a different way. You don't have to stay in the struggle. I felt the struggle because I had grown the business to a certain level and I hadn't made certain changes that I needed to make.
Yes, yes.
And so, okay, you sense that, you make the changes. Okay, but the old me would have said, in order to earn more, I have to struggle.
Yes, I have to work
more.
Harder. And this is as hard as I can work. So this must be my limit.
Yeah.
So you're like, no, nope, you don't need to more. You need different.
Yeah. I just had a client this morning who is, I work with a lot of different women in different industries, but this woman happened to be a coach. I don't just work with coaches. I work with landscapers and lawyers and all sorts of people. But she's a new coach, and she just moved from corporate to coaching, and she just made her first 10K sale. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Amira, that was so easy. I'm like, yeah. And it wasn't that like, she didn't have to go through some iterations and some challenges, because she did. But then the actual conversation was very easy. And it can be like I've been telling her for months, it can be fun. It can be delightful. Yes. It can be easy. Right. And I hope people really get that, because it's not that it's perfect rainbows and unicorns and, you know, money falling from the sky. I don't want to go into magical thinking about it, but the concept of understanding that you don't have to do the hard, that it requires that you hold yourself to a higher standard and make decisions from that higher level, right? You make those decisions, you get the results from that, and you do that a number of times and you no longer are in fear of making that decision, right? I just changed my entire business model. Someone else, that would take, you know, 2 years to do, or they would be freaking out about it. And I can do it very quickly because, again, not tooting my own horn, but like that you've iterated on this and you understand what's truly at stake and what's not at stake, and you don't have those things mixed up. So you have that self-ownership.
It is so obvious to me why you are unstoppable. It is not just the name of your business and your podcast. I mean, you are doing the work. You are challenging the assumptions. You are unlearning and deconditioning yourself and encouraging other people to do the same. And I really hope that people take this to heart and they listen to your podcast and they follow you online. And some of them may even think about working with you, because one of the most brilliant concepts that you have, and I know we need to wrap, I really don't want to, but we do, is your idea of a stopping strategy. I think that can, just thinking of it as a strategy, it's a pattern. It's like, it's just a racket that you run on yourself. And it doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. I don't personally like the term self-sabotage, because it makes people feel like they're doing it intentionally. It's just a habit. And habits can be learned and unlearned. And this stopping strategy is a really good one to pay attention to and to identify, so that you can literally take the break off. As long as you're going to push the pedal to the metal, take the fucking break off. Because that's literally how I think how driven women live their lives. We are going hard, but we are holding on to the break at the same time. And that just burns you out and makes you bitter and definitely holds you back from being all that you could be. Especially if you're a leader, the people that you could help when you're not addicted to the struggle gets 10x'd. So thank you 100%. So much for being with us today. I know we are going to reconnect for your podcast in the near future. Look forward to having another fascinating conversation with you. Thank you so much for bringing all your juicy goodness and wonderful wisdom to us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Diane.
Yay.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.